live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Hey guys, you've heard of the Young Turks podcast because you're listening to it right now. But make sure that you subscribe and give it a 5-star rating if you like it. Thank you for listening.
What? Welcome to the TYT show. I don't know why I said it like that. It just came out. That was a very weird way of opening. Hey guys, obviously Cenk isn't here, but I am going to tell you where he's going to be tonight in just a minute. Maj Jobrani and Ramesh
Srinivasan.
Is here. I just wanted to make sure I got it right. I'm really looking forward to the show, guys. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having
me.
Hope you guys are looking forward to it. I know I am. So later on tonight, after the main show, Cenk Uygur will be on Chris Cuomo's program on CNN. Cuomo Primetime is the name of that program. So make sure you check that out. I don't know what the topic is going to be, but I have a feeling it's going to be fiery. So we'll see.
I have a feeling that Cenk will have a lot to say that is righteous.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely going to have a lot to say. I'll put that out there. So make sure you check that out again on Cuomo Primetime tonight. And then later on, we are going to have actually tomorrow, we're going to have Dana Gould on. He is the person who made The Simpsons what it is. He is an incredible person. He's been on the show before, really smart guy. Are you by any chance familiar with him?
Like, I know Dana, yeah. I've met him here and there a few times at the improv and just doing stand up. Yeah, he's a great guy, very funny guy.
He's a really funny guy.
Yeah.
All right, with that out of the way, let's go ahead and start with the stories. The city of El Paso, Texas is probably gonna have to deal with some serious financial instability, maybe a financial downfall, considering the fact that Donald Trump owes them about $470,000 due to a rally that he held in El Paso and, you know, never paid for. Now, why would he have to pay for the rally? Of course, there are security concerns, which the city provides. There are transportation concerns, which the city provides. And so the whole point is that the various campaigns that might be doing rallies there will pay the city back. Now, on the same day that Trump had his rally, Beto O'Rourke had his counter rally, and Beto O'Rourke has actually paid the money back already. But Donald Trump has received a notice from El Paso indicating that he needs to pay up soon or he might face some additional penalties. According to USA Today, while O'Rourke has covered costs from his counter rally, the city is still waiting for the White House to pay up. The Trump campaign remains quiet on when it intends to pay the city of El Paso. So there's been no word on, you know, if or when the campaign plans on paying back. Now, I want to read from the actual letter that was sent to Donald Trump's campaign. It said, quote, "We are contacting you regarding the past due invoices listed above. We realize this may have been an oversight on your part. However, your account with the city of El Paso is extremely past due. Further, the city may choose to not enter into a contract with an individual that is indebted to the city for more than $100. So a little threat there. A little benefit of the doubt and a little threat there, which I like.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, it's one of those late notices you get. I have an alarm system at my house, and if the alarm goes off and the cops show up, you gotta pay a little fee every time the cops come. Did you know this?
Yeah.
You know this, right? So I do my best to pay the cops the fee. So when I see campaigns like this at $470,000 and they're not paying it, and what's interesting is obviously it's not like Trump sitting there opening up bills and going like, oh, I'm late on my rally bill.
Right.
But it seems like, you know, he's notorious for being cheap and not paying stuff. Seems like his whole campaign is, and the people that work for him, because there's gotta be somebody there who is in charge of paying for the rallies, and they didn't pay for the rally.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's, I think a lot of Americans realize that on some level, Donald Trump is immoral. But I think the real point here, or at least amoral, lacking any sense of morality, but I think the real point is that on almost every single economic level, the guy is a failure, right?
Yeah.
His business is a failure. His taxes are a failure, and the fact that he can't even reveal them speaks to the fact that they're a failure, and that he can't even pay back a city and its workers also, right? This is paying workers who worked on this rally.
So now there's talk of how they can recoup the money in other ways, you know, because, I mean, that's a pretty giant sum of money for a city, yeah. right? I mean, it's not a small sum of money. And so they're thinking about moving some things around and making do until they hopefully will get the money from Trump. But again, he hasn't really responded to any of the requests for comment from the media. He hasn't responded to the notice that was sent from the city of El Paso. And I also want to note that when this rally took place in February, he, of course, as he always does, caused a lot of chaos because during the rally, he said some things about El Paso that simply were not true. And the next video is going to help you kind of see the difference between his rally and Beto O'Rourke's rally and some of the lies that Trump spread. Take a look.
The president repeating the false claim that crime dropped in El Paso after the border wall went up.
I spoke to people that have been here a long time. They said when that wall went up, it's a whole different ball game. Is that a correct statement? Whole different ball game. Went way, way down.
But the reality is, crime in El Paso dropped long before the wall. The claim enraging many. From O'Rourke,
El Paso has been the safest city in the United States of America, not in spite of the fact that we're a city of immigrants, but because we are a city of immigrants.
To El Paso's Republican mayor.
What is the message from El Paso to President Trump?
We need to control our borders, but there are other ways to do it besides just focusing on that single physical barrier.
So the mayor of El Paso also did, you know, a little media tour to talk about what the reality is for El Paso. And he's said over and over again, and I think it's politicians actually on both sides who have said this over and over again, it's not just about a wall, right? The wall isn't going to solve the problems that we're facing right now. And for him to put all of, you know, his eggs in that basket and then completely defame the city as like this crime-ridden place is, it's, you know, incredibly insulting. So there was that controversy, and then you add this a massive amount of money that Trump owes them, and it's just insult to injury.
If he were gonna be honest in that rally, he should have said, we don't have money to pay for the wall, and I don't have money to pay for this rally. So enjoy it, keep cheering, good luck to you, Trump out. You know, I mean, but you know, but also in that article, by the way, it indicated that other campaigns had also not paid and for other, right? Like it was saying during the elections, it said in the, towards the end, it said that there was just in fairness, it said various cities called on Trump and current Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders and former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton to pay some bills for rallies during the 2016 election cycle. So it seems like it's probably more common than we think, but when it's coming from the Trump and him and his campaign, it's just the guy is just, I mean, it's just, he emanates cheapness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, one of my favorite quotes coming from Roger Stone of all people was when, you know, the whole Russia investigation was happening and there was question about whether or not there was payment to the Russians to help Trump for one reason or the other. I don't remember the specific details. The important part was the response from Roger Stone, which was Trump doesn't pay for anything.
There you go.
Right? I mean, imagine being someone who is essentially finds everybody around him objectionable, you know, scared of everybody,
right?
Just want to protect my family, want to protect my business, but claims to protect the United States. But in this very context where he's on the border making a case for Americans, you know, and painting, you know, the other side of the border in negative terms, you know, for him to not even take care of the Americans that are part of his rally on the border shows that he actually doesn't care about the people on the border.
Well, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention that's kind of related to what you're saying is for someone who ran on this idea of protecting the American worker, he's shown us over and over again that he has no respect for the American worker. I mean, he certainly doesn't when it comes to trade policies. Yeah. He doesn't have any compassion for American consumers who are suffering from his nonsensical trade policies. Then you have the issue of, you know, him doing this global tour, discouraging other countries from doing any business from AT&T because he doesn't like AT&T and the, how it's a conglomerate that contains media organizations that criticize him. I mean, it's absurd.
It's crazy that this guy, you know, from day one, his father was paying for him. So he's never been somebody who's been paying for anything, it seems like. He seems like he's been cheap his whole life. Yeah. And then it's crazy that there are people around him that will make excuses for him.
All the time.
As opposed to saying, look, the guy's cheap, let's move on. I mean, you know, that's his characteristic. Let's move on. He doesn't want to pay for the rally. By the way, he should start charging for the rallies. Maybe he can like, I mean, but then maybe less people would come. So I don't know.
I mean, the one area where you give Trump credit is he gave voice rhetorically to the anger that people felt at being ripped off by this larger kind of neoliberal system that we're all embedded within. But he actually is a contradiction of all of it. He's the ultimate hypocrite.
He exploited that.
He exploited it.
Yeah, he exploited it. He was never, it was a disingenuous way of reaching out to voters. And he hoodwinked them. The thing that's most frustrating is that his base doesn't realize that they've been hoodwinked, even after all of this, which
I feel like
is what it is.
I feel like he's the kind of guy that if you went to like you went to dinner with, you'd be like, oh, he's a billionaire. He's going to pick up the bill. But he wouldn't. He'd kind of walk out.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, where did Donald go? And you'd be like, I don't know, he left.
No, he would. No, he's the kind of guy where the bill will come and it'll just sit there. And
yes.
And he'll just be like,
yeah, are we going to do this?
At least, maybe you'll put your credit card down thinking,
right.
All right, fine, maybe we're going to split it.
Yeah.
Didn't he pick up the McDonald's when he had the teams coming over to the White House?
I think
he only paid for the McDonald's.
Yeah, and he was showing off, he was bragging about it. He got a Happy Meal.
Happy Meals,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So crazy. All right, we have an update on a story from last week. Although, I just want to note that right now, no one really knows what's going on with this story. But I'll give you the details. Last week, it was reported that an individual who works closely with Kim Jong-un was assassinated for his failures in reaching a nuclear deal with Donald Trump. Now, this was in regard to the failed nuclear disarmament negotiations that took place in Vietnam back in February. And so Kim Hyuk-chol is the North Korean official who was allegedly blamed by Kim Jong-un for not doing enough to push those negotiations through. And so it was reported by a South Korean media outlet, which was citing an anonymous source, that he had been assassinated as a result. But now there's an update to the story that I think is fascinating. And I also think that you should probably take with a grain of salt because it comes from North Korea. So without further ado, here is CNN's reporting on it.
Kim Jong-chol, the high-ranking official reportedly banished for the failed Hanoi summit, sitting just a few seats away from Kim Jong-un at an art performance over the weekend. His hands cover his face. But if this state media photo is authentic, it directly, perhaps intentionally, challenges a South Korean newspaper report that Kim Jong-chol has been dismissed and is doing forced labor, exiled by a North Korean leader furious over the stunning collapse of talks in Vietnam and President Trump's surprising walkout.
So North Korea right now is arguing that he was not assassinated, that he's actually in detention or he's being detained and they're investigating him. And to be fair, diplomats and officials from Pyongyang have been known to disappear from public view only to resurface after a period of so-called re-education. So is it possible that that's happening to him? Sure, it's possible, but we don't know because can you really trust what's coming out of North Korean media right now? And also, if he is placed in some sort of re-education camp, why is he at a fun event with Kim Jong-un?
Well, he had to cover his eyes. So you see, maybe he went to the event and they were like, but you can't watch. So he's just sitting there the whole time going like,
stealth.
I'm being punished. You know what I'm
stealth
saying?
Stealth mode.
Well, part of the article said that he was not sentenced to forced labor, but instead kept silently in his office writing statements of self-criticism, which is hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
Remember when you get in trouble and your teacher would be like, you have to write lines? You ever do that?
Yeah,
so he's probably in an office going like, I messed up the summit.
I've been very, very bad.
Yeah, been very bad.
I do think it speaks to how little we know about North Korea. And
right.
I do think it's actually good that we're talking to North Korea, which is not what the mainstream media at all, you know, states. They just want to, you know, put North Korea in some sort of evil box. But at the same time, you don't go into engaging with North Korea with your eyes closed.
Right.
You go into engaging with North Korea with as deep an analysis as possible of the way that country operates.
I don't think Trump needs to do any research or analysis because, as he said, right before his first summit with Kim Jong-un, he's just going to rely on his touch.
Yeah, he goes by his gut. Yeah, he goes by his gut. Everything's by his gut. No, it's like, you know, like you said, you got to know the country. And they were saying, apropos to what you were saying about people being disappearing and coming back, it said that the Kim Yong-ju, the brother of Kim Il-sung, who was North Korea's founder, said that he disappeared for nearly two decades. He disappeared in the mid-70s and he reappeared in 1993.
Yeah.
That's just funny to me that, like, I mean, obviously the guy, it's sad what's happening, but it's just funny where they're like, all right, he's going to disappear. You know.
I think both in this story and when we were talking about the El Paso rally earlier, we see something with Trump. A lot of his relationships and his trust is based on sort of a personal feeling, like,
definitely,
who is it kind of like me? Who's my kind of guy? It's insane how personal and private and closed off his entire worldview actually is.
He has an affinity for authoritarians. Yeah. There's no question about that. He also has an affinity for people in positions of royalty or extreme power. So he has, for some reason, this obsession with getting the British royals to love him.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because earlier in the week we did this story about how, you know, he called Meghan Markle nasty in an interview. It was in audio, like we can play it and listen to it. And then after he was caught calling her nasty, he completely denied it. And I kept wondering, why is he denying it? Usually he has no problem going after women. He has no problem especially going after women of color. You know, he's called Maxine Waters low IQ.
Yeah.
So I was kind of shocked that he was trying to deny it. And then I realized, oh, he wants to be on the Queen's good side.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily going to play well with the queen. If
and the princes, too.
And the princes.
The male, you know, role models with all the money.
Yeah.
Well, he likes the macho dudes. He likes these guys that are powerful. They're dictators. He likes those guys. And as you said, it's mostly like, oh, this guy likes me. And there's no intellectual, again, he's not going in.
Not analytical.
No, like, listen, here's how Kim Jong-un has acted in the past. Here's how the country has acted in the past. Let's go have this. Yeah. These negotiations, but just be ready for these things.
Yeah.
But rather, I think he's somebody who goes, no, don't read me that stuff.
That guy's a tough guy. I want to be a tough guy, even though I pretend to be a tough guy.
Let me just hang out with him.
Yeah.
So I want to end this story by giving J.R. Jackson some credit. I wasn't here last week when this initial story broke, but J.R. did cover it, and he was skeptical, and here's some evidence of it.
And there had been, I believe, in March of this year, there was some initial reporting that there had been reprisals against some of the diplomats. It wasn't as specific, and bear in mind that as of right now, this particular report is based off of one anonymous source.
To John's point about how, you know, there's one source with this, it's reported by one particular person. So there has been several senior officials that have said that they've reappeared after it was considered to possibly have been executed for whatever random reasons. But that's a fact. Even if this is, you know, maybe a report that doesn't gonna get confirmed completely and verified and under all terms, the point is it has happened.
So just want to give our host some credit.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We have our eye on the pulse.
Well,
is that what people say? No, hand on the pulse, heart on the pulse.
Hand on the finger on the pulse.
You were close.
You were getting close.
Hand.
Is it the arm on the pulse? Is it the? I think it's the shoulder on the pulse.
Nailed it.
Yes, that's how your doctor takes your pulse. Hold on, give me your
shoulder.
Put your hand right here. Let me get your pulse.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. But when we come back, we have more news for you, including the specifics on Trump's UK visit. I'm gonna give you examples of how much he wants the royals to love him. And also, we're gonna talk about the protests against him when we return.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
welcome back to TYT. I wanted to remind you that Cenk will be doing a rally in Iowa, and it's taking place on June 8th. It's in Des Moines, Iowa. It is known as the Revolution Rally, and you can go, you can watch what he has to say. It's on, again, June 8th at 3 p.m. in Des Moines, Iowa, and there's the address right there. Franklin Junior High is where it's taking place. If you're interested in more details, please go to tyt.com/rally.
And he will pay his bills for it.
He actually, that's a great point.
Right?
Will he? Are we spending money on this?
Well, there's got to be some bill. There's got to be some.
Like homegirls working long hours. You know what I'm saying? Like about a race. He's like stirring the pot. You know, running around town having a good time. I'm over here working. Pay me. Anyway.
In Iowa, he's not really having a good time. He's in Iowa. No offense, Iowa, but come on. Let's be honest.
Always keeping it real.
Yeah.
All right, and then of course. You guys gotta check out Squarespace. If you're interested in building a website, awesome. It's a great place to go, and you're gonna get a discount of 10% if you go to squarespace.com/TYT. But if you're not considering building a website, you're crazy. Like, you gotta have a nice online profile, right? An online profile that you have some control over, and a website does just that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to decide what's on that website. You get to highlight all your accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
You get to tell people about how great you are. Mm-hmm. Create that website.
You're not real till you have a website. We don't believe you're a real person till you have a website. Get a website.
By the way, and they also help you with SEO, which is, you know, you want to show up in the search results when people Google you. Yeah, SEO, that is what it's called.
Yeah, search engine optimization.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you say Oreo? That's an old callback from 2 weeks ago. Is that Oreo? Like the cookie?
Oh my God, I can't.
Oreos.
That story. All right. Eclectic Miscellanea says, Trump paying money he owes? LOL, if history is any guide, I wouldn't hold your breath, El Paso. Jordan writes in and says, oh, maybe you just forgot. Yeah, no, he didn't forget to pay them. He doesn't pay his bills. He didn't get rich that way.
Mm, good point.
True. All right, let's get to his visit in the UK. During a joint press conference with Theresa May in London, Donald Trump was asked about the protests against him in London. There have been thousands of protesters who have taken to the streets to protest against him. And of course, Trump did not miss this opportunity to show the world just how delusional he is. Take a look.
As far as the protests, I have to tell you, because I commented on it yesterday, we left the Prime Minister, the Queen, the royal family. There were thousands of people on the streets cheering. And even coming over today, there were thousands of people cheering. And then I heard that there were protests. I said, where are the protests? I don't see any protests. I did see a small protest today when I came, very small. So a lot of it is fake news, I hate to say. But you saw the people waving the American flag, waving your flag. It was tremendous spirit and love. There was great love. It was an alliance. And I didn't see the protesters until just a little while ago. And it was a very, very small group of people put in for political reasons. So it was fake news. Thank you.
I just want to show everybody the kind of love that was taking place on the streets of London for Donald Trump. So what you could probably hear them chanting there was Nazi scum. And they have basically completely surrounded, completely surrounded a few pro-Trump protesters.
Mm.
So there was a small group of pro-Trump protesters. Things got a little heated because there were tens of thousands of anti-Trump protesters. And when they had encircled them, of course, the cops got there to protect the pro-Trump protesters. In fact, they were immediately escorted into some sort of shop so they wouldn't get hurt or whatever. I mean, it didn't seem like anyone was actually gonna try to harm them, but just in case, it was best for them to get out of that situation because things can get heated, obviously. obviously. But anyway, there were protests. There's very clearly protests. In fact, The Independent, which is a publication in the area, says tens of thousands of demonstrators take to the streets of London to raise their voices against President Trump and his divisive policies on immigration, climate change, and women's rights during the 3-day state visit to the UK.
I mean, I want to, you know, just really point out how infuriated and ready to go the British citizens are around this issue, and how people in the UK, I've been there several times since Brexit and also since Trump's election, people out there are really aggressively ready to protest. They are very angry about what happened. They understood that they've been conned and let down, both by Brexit and by, you know, the elections of folks like Trump. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of courage out there to stand up and say, this is enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we see Brexit imploding in front of our eyes. But I do also want to make one other point, that though I think Trump speaking about everything that defies his very limited worldview as fake news is mm-hmm. delusional, it also works really well with the way social media function. And mm-hmm. this is something we've talked about before, Anna. When you sort of claim something as fake news and you put it online, you put it onto Twitter, you put it onto Facebook, what have you, it creates these two different worlds. One world where all the fans and people who, not even like Trump, but people who, you know, dislike the protests and dislike liberalism, mm-hmm. you know, dislike the liberals, dislike progressives, get all riled up and say, yeah, it's fake news, it's fake news, it's fake news. And the algorithms reinforce the visibility of that. Mm-hmm. Right. But then those like us who say this is ridiculous, we're stuck in our own bubbles and these algorithms are fueling that visibility. So right. actually, this fake news stuff is a very specific, I don't know if it's an intentional strategy, but in a lot of ways it works to his advantage.
You know, to your point, it's interesting because I try to logically look at that guy and go, maybe there's something going on in his head. Like, either logically speaking, these protests I heard were smaller than the last protest, mm-hmm. but there were still a lot of people. It was like 75,000 people. So I was saying logically, maybe he's thinking to himself, oh, well, there's less than before, so it's not that bad. Or logically speaking, maybe they pulled the USS McCain and the motorcade went another block where there's like a couple of Nazi supporters. And logically speaking, it's like, oh, I had supporters. Or more to the point, like you were saying, this guy is an amazing spin artist. Like, he would be a great publicist. Like, he should have a PR agency. Mm-hmm. It's like it's almost like he and Kellyanne, like he's like the Emperor and Kellyanne Conway's Darth Vader. You know what I'm saying? Like he's.
And the architect behind it all is Steve Bannon, who's brilliant when it comes to these issues and understood the media climate and the internet climate and saw Trump as someone who could be the face of this spin.
Well, he's been doing this since he got himself on the Forbes list back in the day when you watched that documentary on Netflix where he's calling the reporter, pretending to be some guy named Barron something, which by the way, his son is named Barron. Yeah. He was pretending to be named John Barron, going, oh yeah, I'm calling on behalf of Mr. Trump. Yeah, his worth is this much. So he was spinning back then. He's been spinning his whole life.
The one thing that, and Cenk gets, I think he gets irritated when I bring this up, but because Cenk believes that there's never any strategy with Trump. There is no genius or intellect or anything when it comes to Trump. But he does have one skill, and that skill is marketing. He is a shameless self-promoter, and I would argue that is a skill. It's a skill that I don't have. I can't stand it. I can't do it. And his shamelessness, his relentlessness, and his persistence in self-promoting has really worked to his advantage. And I think that right now is a really great era for psychologists to study just the way humans behave around strongmen. Because the point that was just made about Kellyanne Conway and all the yes men that surround him, I mean, why? Why? Yes, there's that obsession with power, but think about how miserable you have to be working in this administration. You know, like even if you're power hungry, being surrounded by all these people, all of these, like the multiple investigations, how many people have been sentenced to prison because of their involvement with Trump or because they're bad people aside from, you know, being involved from Trump. I mean, it's just over and over again, you keep hearing these stories about how miserable people are, but they just keep protecting him.
Well, it goes to Ramesh's point. They believe the spin, and they believe, like you said, that they're the ones who go, oh yeah, fake news, fake news, fake news. It's like you're in a cult.
You think they believe it though?
It's like they're in a cult. I honestly feel that if you were to deprogram them, take them out, and really like, because if you think back before when Trump first started, a lot of these people that are working with him now were highly critical, going, this guy's an idiot. Yeah. He'll never be president. What the hell is he? Now he became president.
Like
all
Lindsey
of a sudden, yeah, and then they spun. So it's a cult thing.
Yeah, in psychology, there's a term that we use called confirmation bias. It doesn't necessarily mean that you believe it as it's actually true. Mm-hmm. But if you're already angry about the world outside of you, and this person gives voice to that, you're ready to, you know, believe the unbelievable, right?
It's yeah. I mean, I am curious if members of his administration actually believe the unbelievable.
And one point you made that I just want to emphasize, it's such a great point, is what he's been excellent at now and before during the election in 2016 is coming up with language that carries and travels really well, especially online. But it's like memes, right? You say crooked Hillary, wow, that's or crazy Bernie, or you know, sleepy Joe. Is that the next one?
Yeah.
Anyway, so those things actually work really well because they're packages, they're containers that travel really well.
That's true.
And they kind of rile us up. They get the dopamine going in our brains where we're either like angry or like, ah, oh, this is funny. You know?
And also to that point, they took the term fake news and they spun it.
Because yes.
Fake news was supposed to be the news about the pizza, you know, the pizza restaurant,
Pizzagate,
right?
Yeah, it was the disinformation campaign that was largely contributed to by the Russians.
Yeah.
You know, and that's... You know, that's not Russian fear-mongering. That's just all, at this point, universally accepted based on the intel that we have. And he took that, and this is what I'm talking about when it comes to marketing.
Yeah.
Yes, he reappropriated it for his own purposes and is relentless with it. I hear him say fake news more than I hear any politician say anything else.
It's a powerful media strategy. You need the mouthpiece, you need the mechanism, you need the system. So, I mean, maybe Trump, as Cenk, you know, thinks, is not that intelligent in and of himself, but he's the right front man for this sort of system.
And if you were a sincere person, you see, I think part of that too, but the part of the problem you're talking about, you know, there are people who McManus, who was the general who left, he was
Mattis.
Yeah. There are people who get to the breaking point and they go, I can't take this anymore, I'm out. Yeah. Their principles come through. And if you were someone who was actually had deep principles and deep thoughts, you probably would get out. But this is, I think it's a very, on the surface kind of thing. And like you said, it's survival and it's a game for him. And he tweets about from serious stuff all the way to, silly Academy Awards or whatever. And like you said, he just wants to get all his people on and go, you see, you know, Oprah is a bad person or whatever that he's attacking at that point.
I mean, online, some studies show that fiction outperforms reality, right? Breitbart News, which is not totally fictional, but definitely
mostly
spun heavily and often untrue, was the most trafficked news source on Facebook for the 3 months before our election.
Wow.
Yeah. I love these moments where I question every decision I've made in my life. it's great. It's very... encouraging. Anyway, so we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to get into some policy. Joe Biden has put out his climate change policy, and there are parts of it that I really like, but there are some issues, so we're going to get to all of it. Nice comprehensive look at that policy when we...
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Return.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment.
All right, a few members' comments before we get to the rest of the stories. Onja says, not showing the blimp. We did, though. We showed the blimp, and we did it in the form of B-roll, but the Donald Trump big baby blimp
made
an appearance in
there
London.
It is.
I bathe in a very stable genius's tears, says, my, it looks like Trump had more people to protest him in England than he had to support him at his inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it is funny how he will decide what the crowd size is depending on what's most convenient for him at that moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's his inauguration or a rally, oh, big crowds, huge. The media back there, they don't want to cover these big crowds. But then you have like tens of thousands of protesters. Very, very small. There was one protest. There were no protests.
Guy's got whatever happened to that press secretary? What was the guy who had to go out and say
Spicer?
They had
Sean Spicer.
What's he doing now? Is he like working on Fox or something?
He's sometimes on TV doing interviews. I don't even know what his job is now.
God, it's just, I mean, just all the disaster.
Lots of disaster. Well, let's talk about some great stuff, okay? Which is Democratic candidates focusing on climate change. Hmm. We're happy about that. Joe Biden recently got a lot of heat because in a recent interview with Reuters, he wanted to take a middle ground approach to climate change. Now, as we know, based on countless studies that have come out, we can't take a middle ground approach. Climate change is something that we need to do something about right now, and we need to take drastic measures. And so it is interesting that after he said that, and after he got the backlash, he is now putting out his version of climate change action. So this is his proposal, what he would do as president when it comes to climate change. And there are portions of it that are good. It seems like he took portions of it from other proposals, literally, and we'll get to that later. But here's what we know. On day one, Biden will sign a series of new executive orders with unprecedented reach that will go well beyond the Obama-Biden administration platform and put us back on the right track. He will not only recommit the United States to the Paris Agreement on climate change, he will go much further. Now, I'm reading you exactly what the Biden campaign has put out there. Of course, they're gonna say great things about it, but what does it actually include? Well, he would like to eliminate net carbon dioxide emissions by 2050, which is similar language that we see in the Green New Deal. So far, so good. Enforced mandate to ensure emissions are being cut, possibly in the form of tax penalties. So the proposal he put out does not go into a lot of specific details on enforcement, but a possible tax penalty could be one of the enforcement mechanisms. Job training for those who currently work in the fossil fuel industry. So obviously we would need to transition them into renewable energy jobs, and then curb trade with countries who pollute too much. So those are the major tenets of what we saw from his proposal. But I want to go to you first, Ramesh, because what do you think about this? I mean, based on some of these portions of the proposal, it's not necessarily a middle ground approach.
Right.
What I'm curious about is, does he mean it? I mean, it seems to be a little bit of a reversal.
I think that's the question, Anna and Maz. I mean, I think that it's not clear. You have to examine candidates also by their record. What happens, you know, when push comes to shove, when they have an opportunity to actually vote for something or introduce legislation, when they aren't pressured, like what we see happening here by candidates like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, to, you know, to really not just stand in the middle, right? To really take a stand on these issues. I do think it's interesting that Biden hasn't signed on to the Green New Deal. And I think that speaks to continuing to inhabit this middle ground. I do think it's a great thing, though, that he is being pushed to actually recognize in a very substantive way the realities of climate change and the fact that in climate change crises come all sorts of opportunities to regrow the economy, to set the planet on the right course, to protect vulnerable people and communities who are on the front lines of being affected by climate change, not just in our country, but globally. So I do think that it's good that he's you know, being pushed this way, but I'll believe it when it happens.
Right, I mean, I think it is true that we see a lot of talk, and what's important is we see a record, which for Biden, there isn't much there when it comes to climate change.
Not a lot.
Obama did do some good when it came to climate change, not nearly enough. But I think this is a good sign, right? But I think it's also really important to be skeptical of not just Biden, but everyone who's running for president, right? Anyone who runs for president who says they're gonna do all these miraculous things, you have to like do a little investigation to see how sincere and genuine they are. And just last weekend, California held its Democratic convention. Yeah. And there were a number of progressive candidates, Bernie Sanders being one of them, who touched on this issue. And I want to show you what he said specifically in regard to Biden's previous comments on climate change.
As you all know, there is a debate among presidential candidates who have spoken to you here in this room, and those who have chosen, for whatever reason, not to be in this room. We cannot go back to the old ways. We have got to go forward with a new and progressive agenda. We have got to make it clear that when the future of the planet is at stake, there is no middle ground. We will take on the fossil fuel industry and transform our energy system.
Mm-hmm. So you hear the reaction, the crowd's cheering. Is there a possibility that maybe progressives did push Biden in the right direction, and maybe he is being sincere, maybe he's evolved on the issue?
Well, I mean, that's obviously the case here, right? Yeah. He's just called Biden old, because, like, you know, Joe Biden's so old. When he climate change didn't exist, when Joe Biden was in the Senate, Joe Biden's so old.
Pretty good.
Joe Biden, I love him. Listen, I think one of the problems I have is that he's got an issue, another executive order. And so anytime we get another guy like a climate denier like Trump in, then yeah. He does his order, and it feels like we're playing ping pong.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be great if we could push this, the progressives could push Congress and the Senate, which I don't know if the Senate's gonna go along with it, but to actually put in laws that then can't be bounced around this fast.
That's a great point, because yeah. I think we have to make the case as progressives, but also the politicians who claim to be progressive, or at least the ones who take what we stand for, and make the case to the American people that the disruption, if you will, of these traditional industries like fossil fuel that are really bad in lots of different ways is not an attack on the workers even in those industries. Mm-hmm. Coal miners are gonna be put to work with much better jobs, much better paying jobs, much safer jobs in relation to the Green New Deal. So actually, 99% of people are going to be empowered by a progressive climate plan. And that's the case we have to make to everybody rather than these little ticky-tack plans. And I do note that Bernie Sanders has never said that I'm going to just do an executive action. He's going to try to make the case.
Great.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Which is why he is very supportive of the Green New Deal, obviously. I mean, he's part of it.
And he's voted, you know.
Yes.
His voting record speaks a lot, right?
Yes. Yeah. I love the point about congressional action. That's a more foolproof way, a more secure way of ensuring that these policies don't get struck down in the future by, let's say, God forbid, we have an even worse president than Trump, someone who, you know, has no problems. Well, Trump has scrapped everything, so I don't know if it could get worse, but yeah. I didn't think it could get worse after Bush, and
yeah,
it got worse.
You're right, people want Bush back.
Yeah,
right?
So don't challenge the Republicans.
Bring back Bush. My Green Deal is gonna be so green. I'm gonna have the Riddler will be my spokesperson, because he wears green. And I don't know, that's bad. I need a writer.
By the way, and I also wanna just quickly note that the head of the executive director of the Sunrise Movement did put out a positive statement that I just wanna quickly read to you. Let's go to graphic 20. He put out a comprehensive climate plan that cites the Green New Deal and names climate change as the greatest challenge facing America and the world. So he did get a little credit from the Sunrise Movement. What do you think about that?
I think it's great. And this is actually, I think, a point. I'm really glad that you all mentioned that. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's social movements. It's community-driven movements that actually force these politicians, you know, the ones who aren't just kind of honest and legitimate, I think, for many years, like Sanders and Warren. It really forces the issue. Mm-hmm. It shows that the people aren't going to back down from these issues. And the Sunrise Movement has gotten a lot of steam, right? Just mm-hmm. like some of the other movements we've seen come to bear with the election of Trump. And so this is what gives me a lot of hope here, that things can be pushed in a pro-people, pro-planet, pro-work, you know, way, pro-workers
way. And going back to what you said earlier about how Trump spins this stuff, It's interesting how when the Green New Deal was proposed, he turned it around and said, "Oh, you know, this crazy deal, there won't be airplanes or cows," which meant like you can't have hamburgers, and you know, I guess that's what it means, right? Yeah. But it's like people were like, "What? No cows? Oh, this is a horrible deal."
See, again, it's how you sell things, right? You know, back to our previous discussion about containing packages, memes, you know, these terms that Trump uses. He's a good salesman.
Yes.
The thing is, these things, these policies that actually most Americans would agree on, I would say probably at least 80% of Americans would agree on them because they benefit 99% of Americans, mm-hmm. are actually ones we really need to figure out how to sell them in the right way, in a compelling way.
He's good at personalizing things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to take your hamburgers away. Yeah. And Americans love hamburgers, so
we're gonna still eat our hamburgers. We're just also gonna like not pollute as much.
You know,
it's but a net issue.
How do you propose we sell it though? Because I agree,
question.
I agree with you that it's what needs to be done. I don't think that we're reaching the right wing enough to debunk the narrative that we're seeing from right wing media and from the fossil fuel industry and you know, the deep pockets of the Coke industry. What do we do? How do we make it more personable?
Great more question. Hamburgers, more airplanes. With reusable energy, we can get more burgers with fries for every citizen. I don't know, in America, that's what I propose. Burgers and steak for everybody. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's such a good question, but I think the key is, so control over language. Language really matters because language travels, especially online, right? Mm-hmm. So like the right language should describe what we're thinking about. And that's a big part of it. But I think it's also just really making it very clear to Americans what this kind of pro Green New Deal world would look like. What are those jobs going to look like? What are people going to get paid? How is this going to combat the reality that even though unemployment is down and wages are up, actually those wages are not nearly good enough. People are making less than their parents did, and they're not able to afford the basic necessities of living, like the social contract we thought we signed up for. Mm. So we got to present characters, stories. We need our filmmakers and our artists, and we don't need to make it sound like it's some liberal democratic thing. This is a pro-people policy. Because this is going to affect everybody, these climate change issues. So we have an opportunity here.
We do.
Amen.
All right, so let's move on to a different part of the story that is unfortunate. And also, Biden's had some experience with this. Joe Biden has put out his version of climate change. Joe Biden has put out a climate change proposal, what he would do to combat climate change should he get elected as president of the United States. Now, in a previous video, we talked about the specifics, but for the purposes of this story, we're going to focus on some of the controversy that's starting to brew about his proposal. According to reports, at least three instances in this proposal show that Biden's plan appears to directly copy language from letters and websites for other climate change advocacy organizations. This is a little bit of a disaster because Biden actually ran for president back in 1988. And plagiarism is what destroyed that campaign. Yeah. It was over. And so this issue is coming back again, not old instances of plagiarism, plagiarism from like literally today when this proposal was put out to the public. So I'm gonna give you some specific examples so you can judge for yourselves. And then I'm gonna give you the statement from the Biden campaign. So in one example, here's Biden's version. Carbon capture, use, and storage is a rapidly growing technology that has the potential to create economic benefits for multiple industries while significantly reducing carbon dioxide emissions. That is Biden's version. Then the Blue-Green Alliance version is carbon capture and sequestration is a rapidly growing technology that has potential to create economic benefits for multiple industries while significantly reducing carbon dioxide emissions. All right.
He just made sequestration, use, and storage. That was about it.
That's right.
Couldn't they just have said, I mean, for Biden's version, couldn't they have just said, as the Blue-Green Alliance says, you know what I'm saying?
That's,
couldn't
they just reference it? That's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do.
Which aligns yourselves with those movements.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're giving them credit.
Yeah.
And you're right.
On their
it builds
team.
An alliance. It's actually a very powerful way of doing it. You're citing people who have done some great work, who have done some great activism. Yeah. And you're also not going to have to deal with the controversy of people accusing you of plagiarizing. I'm going to give you one more example. Here's Biden's version. Biden's goal is to make CCUS a widely available, cost-effective, and rapidly scalable solution to reduce carbon emissions to meet mid-century climate goals. Then there's the version from Carbon Capture Coalition Center for Climate and Energy Solutions. And their version says, its goal is to make carbon capture, use and storage a widely available, cost-effective and rapidly scalable solution to reduce carbon emissions to meet mid-century climate goals. I would fail my student. Yeah. I would fail, you're out,
we would
you're
have
done,
to as well.
You fail this assignment, you fail my class, you're out.
Yeah.
Like this is plagiarism. And so Biden's campaign was contacted about this. And they actually conceded that there were some mistakes made. Yeah. Several citations were inadvertently left out of the final version of the 22-page document. As soon as we were made aware of it, we updated to include the proper citations.
What if their response had been, ask not what your country could do for you, ask what you can do for your country, as Joe Biden says.
Oh, we forgot
to cite the right source. Like,
no. No, I mean, it's trying to like claim that this is what he and his campaign are about, but let's be like completely honest. It's not really clear, mm-hmm. much like Hillary Clinton, I would say, what Biden's campaign is about. Where is the vision? Where is the imagination? What's the America he wants? Mm. Like Trump was pretty clear, even though he lied, mm-hmm. what kind of America he was fighting for, right? Yeah. Like make America good again. We're gonna roll back the clock, like to back to this era, the bygone era that where everybody was great except black people and brown people, etc. Right? But Bernie Sanders had a clear vision in 2016, and now, fortunately, in the Democratic like party, in this nomination process, we see several candidates with pretty clear visions. What is Biden's vision? What do you stand for? Can you actually say what you stand for, at least by aligning yourself with these movements and scientists?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why these mistakes were made. All I know is, even if his camp gets the benefit of the doubt and they made a mistake, it shows a level, like lacking those citations shows a level of incompetence that's just not a good look. And I know that right now in the Trump era and the incompetence that we see from the Trump administration on a daily basis makes everything else pale in comparison. But we really need to hold ourselves to a higher standard and demand, as voters, demand more from our politicians, demand more from our side. I think that we do a good job, you know, demanding more anyway, especially compared to what we're seeing with Trump. But no, you can't just say, oh, I forgot to cite all of these various organizations that have put out this incredible work that they've spent their time, their resources, their money on. Just give them credit. And has he reached out to them? Because it is important to draw these alliances, to get this done. You can't just do it alone.
Absolutely.
You hit on a great point. I'm constantly surprised and let down by people that I think know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of assume that people know what they're doing. So you assume someone who's running this campaign and they're in charge of putting this thing out knows what they're doing, and they're gonna go ahead and cite these organizations, and yet they don't.
Right.
So you're constantly going like, what bozos are running these campaigns, or who's behind the scenes? I mean, it wasn't Biden that went and copied and pasted. It's somebody else was doing that. And so you're absolutely right. I feel that in this day and age of everything moving so fast, and you're on social media, and I think you look at the White House, there's so much incompetence. So I think a lot of people just kind of get in and there's incompetence all over the place. And it's very disappointing, because you hope that these people that maybe he wins and they're in control, and some of these people that did that are now in the White House, and now they're gonna give him a speech to do, and they cut and paste from another speech. Well, there goes that controversy again.
I mean, I feel Americans are drawn to people who have visions, who are interesting characters. I mean, mm-hmm. Trump is an interesting character, might be one way of putting it. But people who actually have substance as well, and I think this isn't even meant to be an attack on Biden or even his campaign, but it's like, there is no middle ground with this either, right? There's no middle ground when it comes to actually what you align yourself with, what your values are. It's just unclear here. And a lack of clarity is actually a statement that is very clear, right?
That's true.
Ironically
enough. It definitely does speak volumes.
Speaks volumes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, look, I think that there's the upside of what appears to be Biden realizing that there's this issue that's a top issue for Democratic voters. It's important, and you can't get away with pretending as if it's not a big problem. But then on the other hand, you have some of this behavior that destroyed his campaign decades ago, and it's those mistakes are happening again. Yeah. So we'll see how this goes, but I love to see progressives fighting, demanding more, and it's having an impact. All right, so let's move on to Elizabeth Warren because she has put out a new jobs proposal that I think is fascinating, and I want to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren has announced a new economic policy that she is referring to as, quote, an aggressive intervention on behalf of American workers. So what she wants to do is not only protect American jobs, but create well-paying, sustainable, stable jobs for Americans as well. She unveiled her campaign theme of economic patriotism, you know, kind of taking a word, patriotism, that you hear on the Republican side quite a bit and reclaiming it. She calls for a bigger version of the existing Export-Import Bank, which I want to ask you guys about a little bit. And that would fund a broader range of programs. She also wants stricter rules requiring the US government purchases to come from domestic resources, which would help to create and secure more jobs here in the United States. She wants to invest $2 trillion in climate-friendly industries over a decade. Create the Department of Economic Development, which I'll give you more details about in just a second. And then also research the value of the US dollar and how it impacts the trade deficit. So when it comes to the Department of Economic Development, that would combine the functions of the Commerce Department with the Small Business Administration, the Patent and Trademark Office, various job training and research and development programs that are scattered around the bureaucracy, and the export and trade agencies, including the Office of the US Trade Representatives. The whole point here of combining all of these government entities is to push for a single goal, which is creating and defending good American jobs. So this is comprehensive, incredibly detailed as always. And this is her strong suit, focusing on the economic policies. Yeah. I think that there are some issues with foreign policy, which I talked about in the post game yesterday a little bit. But economic policy is her strong suit, and I love seeing her put this stuff out.
Yeah, and I love how there is a focus on small businesses, which actually are the engine to economic growth in our country. Small businesses are so important and highly neglected in this era of multinational corporate power.
Yes.
And small businesses are actually the ones where those in the business have greater equity in the business. So trying to support small business growth in this country is extremely important. I think it's great also, you know, I've spoken to Warren twice in person, and both times I've spoken to her, she uses the term social contract to describe the deal she wants American workers to have with work, meaning you work, but you get more than enough to cover your basic needs, retirement, healthcare, and so on, right? So you stem this tide of greater economic disenfranchisement that is the reality today for the American worker, no matter what the macroeconomic statistics show. So I think it's great. I also think that it would be great to think about these policies in relation to automation and the gig economy, which we've spoken about before. A large number of jobs are going to be taken by private corporate-owned robots,
yes.
including ones by Uber and Google and so on. And it's really important that in the process, the worker is protected, the dignity of labor, so labor is not exploited.
What do you think would be a good protection for workers who might be impacted by automation?
Great question. So I think it's really important that we think now about the jobs of the future, the jobs where we work with automated systems, right? So there was a great story on the New York Times where it talked about in Sweden, I know Sweden's not the same as the US, where it was talking about how mining work has now been replaced by robots. I'm not a big fan of mines personally, I'll admit it, but actually how new jobs have been introduced where those miners are now operating the robots and training the robots, not in a sort of passive way, but actually operating the robots so that they can do the mining for them. So it's jobs like that, work of the future, you know, working with technologies, introducing new jobs. And if there aren't enough well-paying, dignified jobs that support economic security out there, everybody has to be insured a basic wage floor and healthcare and benefits. You know, we've spoken about the universal basic income. To me, it's okay, but it's not in itself the right solution. I think everybody in a society who invests, you know, the internet, for example, was invested in publicly, right? Mm-hmm. This was a government-run project, yet none of us almost are reaping the benefits of this massive, you know, many trillion dollar industry that is the internet in multinational corporates, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely, I think in the beginning phases, some upsides, but now we're seeing the downsides of these corporations that are taking advantage of our private data, selling that data. But look, this is true of pretty much every major industry in the country. You know, we contribute quite a bit to research and development, and then these very companies turn around. And in a lot of ways, they exploit us, take advantage of us, they ship jobs overseas. Right. And just to kind of buttress your point about working alongside the robots and using automation to our advantage, not fearing them because they're gonna take jobs away. Richard Wolff made a point about how in a society where the employees actually have more of a say in a company, where they might even own the means of production.
Absolutely.
You could even have a situation in which robots or automation free up your time, right? And so it's a benefit for everyone because you're still producing the same work. Maybe you're even producing more, but you have a little more free time. I mean, it sounds a little utopian to me. I'm gonna keep it real.
Yeah,
it's gonna be difficult to accomplish something like that, but I would love to live in a society.
There are
like
enough
that.
Economic studies that I've read, like from my new book, where we actually see when those affected by these privatized technological developments, actually instead of just being passively, you know, exploited by them, when they actually have investment and equity in those enterprises, everyone can win out. You can still create profitability without having this sort of zero sum game.
And the ultimate thing is, I think it's great that she's putting these proposals out. I mean, that's what I guess she's being known for, that she's going with these policies. I got ideas.
Yeah.
I got ideas, because otherwise, you know, you're combating these people that keep saying coal and whatever they want to hold on to. But she's got some plans, and the world is moving in that direction. Whenever people go, oh, immigrants are taking our jobs, I go, immigrants aren't taking your jobs. I used to go to the parking lot, and the guy working, there was a parking attendant. Now it's just an auto, you know, it's a machine, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The phone does a million things that a million people used to do. So as you said, we need to listen to somebody like this and these ideas. And she, another thing she tweeted that wasn't part of this, but she tweeted out that she wants to have $60,000. Was that her that said $60,000 minimum wage for teachers? I think it was her.
Was that Bernie?
Yeah. Okay, well, that was Bernie.
I didn't see that tweet.
Either way, I think that's the kind of stuff we need to do. We need to change the paradigm a little bit and invest in these types of things.
Yeah, and she has her own, you know, version of funding programs that help educate to apprentice programs. I'll give you an example. She calls for a tenfold increase on spending on apprenticeship programs and restructuring of some existing job training programs to more clearly resemble the widely admired German apprenticeship model.
Yeah.
So she's actually looking at models throughout the world to kind of get a sense of what's working, what hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And she's putting these policies together based on these case studies, which I think is so important. I mean, this is the thing that I never understood. We see models that work really well in other countries. Finland, with their public education system, it is the best. Why don't we learn from these case studies? Why don't we try to apply these very programs?
You know, as a comedian, I was touring in Europe recently. It was interesting when I would do material about my kids and how they're in different programs and how there's private school and you're trying to get them ready so they can get into the best college and they gotta have skills and this and that. A lot of the audience was kind of staring at me like, why are you working so hard? Because in their countries, everyone gets to go to college if they want to go to college.
Right.
But they didn't understand this concept.
That's the social contract, right? Where everyone wins and it's in the order. And this is what my friend Vikash once told me, as he's a small business center. People, planet, profits, right? They all can exist in the same formula, but it's about people first.
Definitely. Oh, I love that. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, guys. Maj Jobrani and Ramesh Srinivasan.
That was amazing.
I did?
You got it.
You got it.
All right. Where can we, you do shows everywhere.
Yeah, actually I got a new podcast called Back to School with Maj Jobrani. So people can check it out on iTunes, Spotify, nice. All this stuff. And it's free, so subscribe. Back to School with Maj Jobrani, check it out.
Love it. And Ramesh, social media.
Yeah, so you can, so I have a new book coming out in October called Beyond the Valley, right? Really about how these new technologies are shaping and impacting our world. But what we can do, you know, the alternatives that are there for a digital future that includes us all.
I love it. And check out his lectures on YouTube. They're really good.
Kind of nerdy, but yeah.
No, I love them. I know our audience would love them as well. Anyway, thank you again. And for everyone watching, we will be back with hour two.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.